Accession number 10602, Reel 1.
G. Elliot, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Mr. Elliot?
Number 1 Sunderland Street, Wheatley Hill, County Durham, on the 6th of September 1913.
Was it a large family you were born into?
At the time, yes, because my mother was looking after her own family, her own brothers and sisters, and eventually our family became a total of 7. Father, mother and 4 sons and a daughter.
Where were you in the line of children?
I was the oldest. I was the oldest by about 7 years.
And how many brothers did you have?
Other 3 and 1 sister. She's alive. The 3 brothers are dead.
You said you lived with your grandfather's family. What family did he have?
Oh, I think there was about 9 altogether. But there were some of them married. There was two married. I think it was the oldest or the second oldest son, and I'm not sure whether my aunt, who was married, was older than my mother, but I'm not sure. But there was the 1 male and 1 female married. Now there was Uncle Joe, who served and was decorated in the First World War by the King of the Belgians. He was awarded the Croix de Guerre. There was my aunt Florence, my uncle Norman, my aunt Lillian, my uncle Thomas, Uncle Norman, Uncle Thomas, and Violet, Aunt Violet. That was without my mother and the other 2 I've mentioned. While we were living, some of the girls went into service. The remainder worked in the mines. It was the only place for them to work. And my mother looked after them until they all left home, either married or... But that was the only way. When they left home, they were all married, and that, they had their own families, and that was it.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a coal miner. Coalio when I knew him. He was working as a miner. When war came in 1914, he joined the Royal Navy as a stoker and served on 3 cruises on the North Atlantic convoys. 2 of the ships I remember, the 3rd one I can't. One was HMS Acasta and HMS Cumberland. During the time he was a sailor, they were changing over then from coal-fired burning ships to oil-fired. I don't know which order, but I recall my father showing me a little book with different plans and what have you of the ship's boilers or whatever, the fires. A strange thing he told me, which I could hardly believe, was when they were coal burning, he used to say any glass bottles used to be thrown into the furnace. Now, I've asked other naval personnel who I've met over my services, both in India and everywhere else, and they just seemed to laugh it off. But my father said they used to, any glass bottles, any broken glass, would be taken to the stokehold and thrown in to assist with the eating of the ship. So that was something that, you know.
Did he survive the war?
Oh, yes. He was released from the Navy in 1919 and started his work back at Thornley Colliery as a coal ewer. He worked for 2 years and was badly injured, never worked again. In the 30s, when the country was asking for, not the Home Guard, the other, air raid precautions, he was one of the first volunteers in the Wheatley area. and he was still there at the end of the war. So I'm afraid he and I had a disagreement in 1932, and I went into the army, and we rarely spoke after that.
Did your mother work?
No, she had too much to do in the house.
What was Wheatley Hill like as a place to live?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer. I think almost nearly everybody knew everybody, or if they didn't know everybody, they would know someone who did know someone. It was a close community, like most mining communities of small sizes like that. I only had two disagreements myself in the 19 years I lived there, so I don't know whether that speaks for itself or not.
It was a mining village.
Mining village, the only work in them, except for the shops and a couple of stores, the only work was in the mine. And people from Wheatley Hill would be either working at other collieries, and people from other villages would be working at Wheatley Hill Colliery. It was where you could get a job when you finished school. You finished school at 14. When I finished school at the end of September 1927, I ran from Wheatley Hill School to Shotton Colliery because I knew there were some vacancies. There was none at Wheatley Hill. But Wheatley Hill School used to come out at 3:30 on Fridays, where other schools had the hour and a half for midday break. We only had the hour, but we used to finish at 3:30. Well, the Shotton School finished at 4, and I ran from Wheatley Hill School straight to the colliery office, and I was first in the queue and got the job.
You've mentioned schooling there. What age did you start school?
5.
And which school was it?
Wheatley Hill Infants.
What was life like for you in school?
It's difficult to remember the infant school, but I think I enjoyed it. I think, to be quite honest, I enjoyed all my schooling. You didn't get all your own way, eh? But I liked school. I did, to be quite honest. I liked school. I liked going to school.
Do you remember the subjects you were taught?
Well, I cannot remember the infants, but then in the junior school we were taught arithmetic, English, dictation, spelling, mental arithmetic, drawing or painting, whichever you could do best. But you only got that about once a week or so. And that was in the junior school. And then when you went up into the what we call the big school, which was the senior boys' school and the senior girls, who were separated. In the infants, we were all together, class and play yard. But in the juniors, the boys was kept clear of the girls. They sat in the same school, could be sitting next to each other in class, but when at playtime or assembly time, morning and midday, you were kept separated. And when you went into the big school, the girls were kept and taught separately from the lads. There was a big wall between the two. Although it was the one big school, there was a big wall between the girls and the boys. And God help any lad that was caught climbing over the wall. I can't ever remember any trying, but he would have got hammered if he had.
Was the discipline quite strong, firm?
Yes. It wasn't harsh. But if the teacher thought you needed it, you got it. And you didn't dare go home and tell your parents you'd had it, because they would give you a worse one. So you kept quiet, you accepted.
Was this the cane?
The cane, yes. Oh, aye.
Any particular teachers that stand out in your memory as having some influence on your life?
No, I cannot say that there was any particular teacher, because they all went through a kind of system. But as I say, I was always in the A stream. And There was one teacher who was the games master. He's games and sports. Now, when I say games and sports, it was football. And if you were a footballer, that was it. But once a year, there was a competition between a number of schools. There weren't very many, but at Wheatley Hill, there's roads, the Cemetery Road, the Hartlepool Durham Road, the Wingate to Shotton Road, and the road from the junction of Wheatley Hill to the Wingate Shotton Road. Now, they used to call it the 4 miles. I don't think it ever was 4 miles, but that's what they called it, the 4 miles. And that was a road race held on the Saturday nearest to May Day. And each year, the schools would be sent out, you know, the headmaster would say, you're going to go on for a practice run and we want the first six in to represent the school. Well, in 1927 was my last year at school. This was the beginning of May. And being all lads from the 7th class, 7A, 7B, 7X, 7X, X7, the two X's and the X were the brain boxes. The 7A was the next one down. But you also had 7B and 7C in the same class. So, naturally, nearly all the footballers came from that class. And all the good runners came from that class. And we did the first practice run to pick the team. Well, six of us came hand in hand along the front street at Wheatley Hill, and the headmaster blew his top. He says, I sent you out, he says, to race for to get the first six. So he says, you'll have to do it again. We went out, and I took the lead just at the end of the front street out into the country. There's all houses there now, by the way. And I took the lead, and I was back in the school first, and I was half-dressed to go home when the second lad came in. And the headmaster, for some reason or other, didn't believe I'd done the full run, because I'd won it so easy. So he said there would be another practice run, but he would have teachers out at points with different coloured papers, and you would have to have the coloured papers to show when you came back. So we set off again, halfway around the 4 mile. Teacher at the end to make sure you turn around. There was a teacher at the junction of the Hartlepool Durham Road and the Cemetery Road at Wheatley Hill, and there was another one at the front street and the Wheatley Hill Thornley Road. The T junctions. So we set off, and I came in and was walking out of the gate dressed before the second lad came in. The local lads, they had me odds on and were gambling on me to win the 4 mile race because I'd won the trials too so easy. Well, unfortunately, the May Day Saturday, my youngest brother died on the Monday before. He was only 15 months old. My grandfather had come in from the mine at about 6:30, and I used to get up to go and let the ends out and feed them before going to school. And my aunt was sitting in one chair, my grandfather was sitting in another, and I was kneeling on the floor with my little brother in his cot, and it had rockers on. And my grandfather used to say, "Howie lad," or "Come on, bunny lad, give us a rock. Let's see that smile on your face." And the baby started to rock, and he had a huge smile on his face, and he suddenly just collapsed. My granddad said to me, "Hurry for the doctor." And that was one race I lost. By the time the doctor came to the house, he was dead.
Did you know the cause of death?
The doctor said it was convulsions. He was dead within seconds or minutes, less than minutes. Now, because of the rules of those days in the mining villages, if there was a death in the house, nobody went to work, no one went to school. So my parents, either on the Thursday or the Friday, said, you can run if the teacher will let you. So I went up, as the baby was being buried on the Friday, I waited till after the funeral, and I went to school and I saw the sports master. And I said, my parents have given me permission to run tomorrow if you let me run. He said, no, he said, you haven't been to school this week, so you don't run. He said, if one of the other lads will drop out, then you can run. But none of them would drop out, so I didn't run. The lad who was chosen to take my place finished last of the whole competition. He was a year younger than me. And it's obvious a 14-year-old in those days would be stronger than a 13-year-old. At least that was my working out. And as I say, this was May, and I finished school in September. Now, another funny thing happened with the same games master. He sent for me, and I spoke to him, and he said, if you stay on at school during the half year after you're supposed to finish, while the football year's on, you can play football for the school team. Well, with the circumstances at home, I said, I'm sorry, but I've got to go to work. I says, I've got to bring money in. I said, my parents can't afford to keep me at school another extra 6 months just to play football. Strangely, Wheatley Hill School only lost one tournament they were in that season, and that was against the biggest school on the coast, and they played away in the final of one of the county cups. But they won every other, they won the league, there was no opposition in the league, and they won every other game, every other tournament they entered but one. They had nine who represented the old Kelleran District Schools League when the Kelleran District Schools League got into the quarter finals of the English School Shield, the old English School Shield, which it used to be called, I believe it's called Trophy now. And the team they met was the team who had won it the previous season. And when you saw those lads come onto the field, you would have thought they were minors rather than schoolboys. It was Al Freeton from Derbyshire, and they beat our lads 4-3, I think it was.
The strong sporting links in the county and in these mining communities.
Oh yes, yes. In Wheatley Hill Village itself, there must have been about a half a dozen football teams. Each chapel, church, maybe a pub or a club, the colliery. They would have football teams. There would be a youth team, there would be the school team, and they would be well supported. Well, you know, I mean, when I say well supported, being a small village, a lot of the men would be there, and they would cheer because there'd be some members of the family or the men that were working with their sons, and they would go to help out. Oh yes, it was close.
You said that you're in the class of better educated children, more intellectual children. Did you have examinations of any kind to sit towards the end of your schooling?
No examinations at the end of the schooling, but you got the annual examination for what you'd done in the year in the class. Except for algebra and logs, which I was never even given the basic training for, they were the only two subjects I failed in. I was looking to get any points for them. But I always got good marks for everything else.
Was there any possibility of going on to grammar school?
Yes, when you were in the first year in the senior school, there would be one boy from the boys' school and one girl from the girls' school. But you had to be able to have the money to keep them there, to the clothing, the uniforms, and for every extras which a grammar school needed in those days. And obviously, it wasn't always the one who finished top of the class. Because I recall the lad who got the place from our class, he was nearer the bottom rather than the top. But his parents could afford to keep him at grammar school. Coming to that, there was a lad called Joseph Elliott, no relation whatsoever to me, but lived in a couple of streets over here. The headmaster knew he was a brilliant mathematician and wanted him to go to school, to the grammar school, and he would pay for his first uniform and what extras was needed for the first year out of his own pocket, because he thought this lad would be an asset to the country, and his parents couldn't afford to take it on after that, so the lad lost his place in the grammar school. Now, I think he started work in the mines, but when he became 18, or around about 18, he joined the Royal Navy, and he became one of the youngest petty officer writers between the two world wars. Unfortunately, he died of either a brain hemorrhage or a brain tumour. But he was brilliant with maths, and he would have gone much higher. As I say, he was one of the youngest petty officer writers in the Royal Navy between the two world wars.
Can we go back to your family situation?
Aye.
What kind of house did you live in? You're quite a large family.
Four rooms and a pantry. There was a coal house outside and the toilet was outside. There was a tap, a water tap inside, but there was no drainage for it. You had to have a bucket or a dish or a basin, something to catch the water in case there was drops. You know, when the little ones maybe was going to turn the tap but hadn't turned it tight up, you had to have a bucket or something there for to catch the drops.
Was there a tendency for it all to freeze up in the winter?
Oh, yes.
Well, what did you do then to get water?
Well, there was a stand tap, which the showman used to use, which was, I don't know if you know Wheatley Hill or not, but there was what they called the show field, which was beside the junior and the infant school. Now, this field, when the show people used to come two or three times a year, there was a standing tap where they used to connect up for to feed the steam engines, which used to generate the electricity or the power for the fairground roundabouts. And if you froze up, you had to go there and carry the water from there down home until it thawed out. Buckets.
You said it was a four-roomed house, I presume.
Yep.
Two bedrooms and two rooms downstairs?
Yes.
What were the sleeping arrangements in such a large family?
Well, you'd have two double beds in each room. The girls would be in one room and the males in the other, no matter what the ages. But my father and mother had the downstairs when they were together. They had the front room downstairs, and the other room was the living room, come kitchen, come cookhouse, come dining room, everything. There would be two tables, and you would get sat down at two tables. The men would get served first, and the women what was left, generally.
You're essentially two families. Who was the head?
Oh, my grandfather. My grandfather, West Garth. He was, he had to meet all the conditions. Before we had electricity, he would have to pay a shilling a week to the doctor. But that covered everybody in the house. It didn't cover just one family or two families. It covered everybody who was in that house. Now, I'm not certain when the electricity was brought to the house, but there was a number of lights you could have in the house, which the colliery installed, and you had to pay a shilling a week for that. Didn't matter how long you used it or how little you used it, the head of the house was kept a shilling off. Now, another thing, every miner from the age of 14 when he started, well, I'm saying 14 because that was the usual age when you left school, and if you got a job, you started the work at the mine. You had to pay a penny to an hospital, whether you ever went into it or not, for treatment. You had to pay a penny per week, every week of your life you were working, to that hospital. The hospital which the union were at Wheatley Hill had was Hartlepool, a hospital in Hartlepool. Now, my father, his colliery, the Durham County Hospital in Durham City. So my grandfather, although he's paying a shilling a week to the doctor, he still had to pay his penny to the hospital. Every working miner in the house paid a penny to some hospital. It may have been Durham, Hartlepool, Sunderland or Newcastle, wherever, whichever one, I think it was the union committee, said that was the hospital they would support. That's what happened.
And on the payment of that, you got free treatment?
You got the treatment in the hospital, which was given at that time. Yes. There was. But as I say, you know, you may never have anyone from the colliery in hospital, but the hospital still received the penny from every miner. There was a strange thing about that. I was in hospital in Sunderland in 1960. I'd had very major surgery. And I was in a bed next to a dockyard worker. And this dockyard worker just turned around. He says, you know, your so-and-so miners always got preferential treatment to everybody else. And I just passed the remark to him. I said, do you and your mates where you work support any hospital? What do you mean by that? I says, well, you've got a union, haven't you? He said, yes. I says, does your union not agree that each of you should pay a penny to the hospitals when you were in those days? Why no, he says, we didn't. I says, that's why we miners got it, because I said, we paid. I said, there may be 600 miners at the colliery where I was working. That hospital got 600 pennies every week, whether they had anybody in or not. Oh, he says, I didn't know that. I said, well, now you know why miners got preferential treatment. I said, they paid for it. And it was the same with the welfare, the recreation grounds, if you like. But when you see CW behind any village name, it's colliery welfare. You had to pay a penny a week for that as well. There was no option. It was just kept off your pay note and was there, just like the hospital or anything else, where they had agreed. It was kept off before you even got it.
Was there plenty of food in the house? Did you have good meals?
Good food? During the First World War there wasn't, and during the 1921 miners' strike and the 26th general strike, no. Very, very short. I went to soup kitchens twice. That was during the 1921 coal strike and during the general strike. I got the odd meal or whatever it was at the soup kitchens.
What kind of food were you getting?
Homemade, generally. My grandfather had his garden, and he would grow lots of vegetables. So we would use the vegetables up while we could. And with my father being on compensation a pound a week, that helped greatly. But it was still a short of food. It's not the first time I've gone to a farmer's turnip field when I was hungry, and I've gone in, I've got a turnip. No, I didn't take the first one or the biggest one. I got a one I thought I could eat, and that was it. And that maybe be my meal, or part of most of my meal for that day. I had no hesitation in doing it. Mind I would have got hammered off my mother or my dad if I'd been caught. If anybody had reported me, I would have got hammered, because they would never have done it. But I didn't see why I should starve.
Was there a great deal of help within the community?
Oh, yes. Yes. Any amount. In those days, lots of the people, I'll not say lots, but some people would have chickens. They called them chickens, they were hens actually. Others would have pigs. Now, when you did your vegetables, you would take the peelings for the people who had the pigs, to feed the pigs. And when they killed the pigs, they would give you a piece of the pig. And that's the way it went on. Just the same if you had eggs and the people down the street were hard up, you wouldn't hesitate to give them a couple of eggs to help them out. That's the way it happened. I mean, your neighbour might pop in and say, "Hey, Hinnie, can I lend us a bit of sugar or a bit of salt, or has they got this, has they got that?" And if they had it, they would share it. I mean, there was no, you could leave your doors wide open. The only thing that would come in maybe is the dogs trying to get something, but no, they were a very close community. They were very close and they helped each other. It didn't matter whether you were, what your religious failings were. Mind, when it came to marriage, that was a different kettle of fish altogether. But living was another thing. They would help each other. A Catholic would help a Protestant if they'd been injured. Say the woman was having a baby, the woman, other women would come in with a midwife or the district nurse, I think as they were called those days. They would all give a helping hand.